state of Ohio, there have been reports of a large man-like creature roaming the state. Jody Cook, along with his group, the Ohio Center for Bigfoot Studies, has been collecting data and evidence on the existence of Bigfoot, also known as the Grassman, in the state of Ohio for the last 15 years. Jody Cook has also been seen on the History Channel, the Sci-Fi Channel, and the Learning Channel, and is now on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network, bringing you Ohio Crypto Radio. The All Souls Paranormal Radio Network brings you some of the...
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Ohio Paranormal Radio tonight. Tonight we have Adrian on here. She's a good friend of mine. I've known her for a while. She's a Bigfoot researcher. Prior to that, she was a paranormal researcher. So we'll have her on here shortly, and it's going to be a good show. It's going to be a good show because we're going to get a female's view on. Monster hunting. First thing I want to talk about, next month, give everybody a recap, May 14th, 15th, and 16th to the Ohio Bigfoot Conference at Sulphur State Park. It's going to be one heck of a conference. If you guys get a chance to go, definitely get out there and get to that conference and things. And then we got Indie Fest coming up here in July, which is Indie Paranormal Fest. If anyone's been there before, it's a pretty decent paranormal con. It's 3 days long. It's a 3-day event, so which is it's great. So if everybody gets a chance to get out to that, you can find more information on the net about that. Like I said, in a few minutes here, we're going to go ahead and we're going to get Adrian on the line here, and we're going to just go to a real short commercial break to get her on. So just everybody hang loose, and we'll be back shortly.
The All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Best paranormal radio on the net. Check out www.asprn.com to listen to archives, read about upcoming events, check the schedule, or to listen live every night for great paranormal radio. ASPRN offers you some great radio starting Sunday with Dead Speak Radio and The Man Who Talks to Angels. On Monday, Para Investigators Radio and The Chat People Radio. Tuesday, Maps Radio and Miami Town Ghost Talk Radio. Wednesday, Haunted Times Magazine Radio, Embrace the Dark, Paranormal Outreach Radio, and Residual Hauntings Live. On Thursdays, Ohio Crypto Radio, EVP Spirit Talk Radio, and Paranormal Encounters Radio. And on Fridays, Behind the Veil, and Saturdays, Paratrinity Radio. So be sure to tune in to www.asprn.com and click Listen Live.
Join the crew from NKYPS for Paranormal Outreach Radio every Wednesday night, kicking off the Paranormal Powerhouse lineup. Mike, Matt, and Crystal turning up the heat with a variety of guests from the paranormal community. There'll be fun, laughter, and a bit of information dealing with the paranormal issues. Join us every Wednesday night on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Paratrinity Radio airs live every...
Are you hearing bumps in the night? We'll help you find the answers you desperately need. Get your paranormal radio fix for the week. Tune in to Para Investigators Radio with Kurt and Bill. Every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's each and every Monday night at 9 Eastern in Studio A. Only on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
Have you ever wondered if the urban legends in your town were true? Join Cincinnati Regional Association for Paranormal Studies, also known as CRABS, on their ventures in the search of the tri-state's urban legends. Every community has its urban legends and folklore. The Cincinnati area is no different. Those stories of tragic deaths and the hauntings that follow. Sighting of strange creatures. devil worshippers, abandoned crematoriums, ghosts and ghouls, and even Charlie Manson. Krabs has heard all the stories also, and now they are going to check them out for themselves. They are going all over southern Ohio, northern Kentucky, southeast Indiana, looking for the truth behind these stories. But the best part is, they're taking you with them. So join them for their paranormal road trip as they investigate the tri-state's urban legends. You can visit their website at www.o-craps.com. That's www.oh-craps.com.
All right, we are back. I just want to make one real quick announcement, too. There's in June 25th and 26th and 27th, the Marin Falls Paranormal Society is having a paranormal conference in Akron. It's going to be a really good event. There's going to be a lot of good speakers up there. And you can reach them either through Facebook or they do have a site, mfps.com or Marin Falls Paranormal Society. Check them out. Definitely we're going to have them on here about a week before the conference. Okay. Just wanted to get back with you guys. Now we have Adrian. Adrian, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Just trying to bear with me there. I've been fighting the flu for the last 2 days. So.
Oh, I know how that's been.
Oh, yeah. So, Adrian, how long have you been? Well, when I say like the paranormal field, I mean, some people think paranormal is just strictly ghosts. But, the whole realm of paranormal, I think, is everything. Cryptozoology, ghosts, UFOs, things like that. But in the whole paranormal field, how long have you been doing this for?
I was in a ghost hunting group I was in two different groups, so together about almost 2 years before I started doing the Bigfoot.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Okay, so.
Ohio Center for Paranormal Research. Mm-hmm. Me and Jay both were in that team, and we left to see the Bigfoot.
Now, I mean, the ghost stuff is kind of interesting, but, I don't know. I guess from being so much out in the field, I find being out in the field is a little bit more exciting at night than, I guess, being stuck in a room, talking to yourself, trying to get a response back.
Definitely.
It's a little bit more exciting because your heart's beating and stuff. The fact that, you know ghosts can't hurt you. They can make you hurt yourself, there are spirits out there, I think, that can really hurt you. But the fact that knowing that you're out in the woods and there's something out there that can eat you, I think is a little bit more, a little bit more exciting there. But so have you been really into the Bigfoot stuff when you were doing your paranormal stuff or prior to paranormal? Is that what?
Yeah, practically all my life. I mean, I've always been fascinated with it. I grew up in the country, and we always had some weird stuff going on. So, yeah, I've always been fascinated by Bigfoot and other cryptic stuff, too. I'm sorry.
Now, you're with the Tri-State Bigfoot, and you guys are based out here in Cincinnati, correct?
Right.
Okay. Now, are you guys just going to look into other crypto stuff? Are you just strictly going to stick with your Bigfoot stuff, or are you just going to whatever pops up in the middle of some of your investigations?
We've been tossing around. If we got a call for something strange going on, and it may not be Bigfoot or whatever, yeah, we'd probably go check it out. I mean, interested in that stuff too.
Well, that's cool. Have you guys, well, I know you guys gone out, since the group started, pretty much, it seems like, is there anything that was interesting that you found or, any particular, you don't have to give the name of the site, but any particular, site out there that you think that's, a lot of heavy activity?
Yeah, we've got a place that we're still doing an ongoing investigation. We're going to go back in Kentucky. And the last time we were there, we had responses to our tree knocking. We had rocks thrown into the camp. It got pretty hairy.
Yeah, I know exactly where you're talking because I did some investigating down in that area back in the 90s, and, you know, I've got some really good prints that came out of there. A lot of good, information was coming out of there by, quite a few, different researchers going back to probably the 70s. Ron Schaffner, I know, was doing some investigating about some sightings in that particular area also. We just want to mention, would you be able to speak up just a little bit?
Yeah, you want me to put it back on, pick it off speakerphone?
No, that's fine. If you can just speak up just a little bit, that'd be fine. Yeah, thank you. But there's a lot of stuff going on down here now that they, you know, they got a lot of, bison and stuff down in that area. I think they've had quite a few bear sightings actually down there. And what's interesting about that, the site that you're talking about, these people, they definitely know the difference between what they're seeing in a bear,
Oh, yeah. Well, bear is becoming really popular. I mean, they're getting pretty thick down here. I mean, people are having them coming up and eating out their garbage and everything. So they're learning to deal with the bear.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, I want to, ask you about a female's role, okay, in the paranormal field. Because I know that, there's a lot of females in the field, of ghosts and things like that. They're, out there in the field, with the guys doing this stuff. But there's not too many female researchers, out there. I mean, I know probably a handful that actually go out into the field and stuff. I mean, that don't mind getting dirty, don't mind, getting out there and, getting bit by the bugs and all that stuff. Now, that doesn't bother you or anything like that. I mean, is it the excitement of, knowing that there's something out there that you can sit there?
It doesn't bother me. I grew up camping all my life, and especially down in Kentucky. That's where a lot of my family's from, and spent my summers down there, and we camped a lot. And I grew up on a farm. I'm used to bugs. I'm used to snakes. I'm used to all kinds of critters. I just don't like spiders in my tent. That's the only thing that bugs me.
From being in Iraq, seeing, dealing with camel spiders and stuff, I mean, spiders terrified me. So, yeah, I agree with you there. But, do you feel that the field of cryptozoology, there are more and more females getting in there. I'm trying to figure a right way this, say this without sounding like a male chauvinist. Do you think that because it was a man's field that, that women weren't getting the respect in the field of cryptozoology like they were in the paranormal, and that's why there's not so many of them?
A lot of women are probably afraid of to go along. They're going to be the camp cook, having to clean up after everybody and getting stuck doing stuff like that. But I just make everybody fend for themselves. It's hard to say because, like Jay and LB, they're the guys in the team, and they've always showed me respect, and, they treat me like one of the guys, so I guess it depends on who you're with.
Yeah. I mean, no, because, I knew a lot of female, Bigfoot researchers out there that, I highly respect. I think they do a lot better job than, some of the, guys that are out there. And I like the idea that a lot more females are getting into it because, because I know there's a lot of young girls out there that want to do stuff like this. And when they see role models, I mean, it makes things, smoother for them. They can get into it and, and things. Going out, monster hunting and stuff, it's just, I've been I've been scared on some things, and some of the females that I've been with out there in the field are like, hey, let's go further out and look. And it's like, you know, I don't know. I mean, this thing's throwing stuff at us, you know, and you want to, he'll kill me and take you for your mate. So, I mean, you'll live, I'll die, you know. I mean, it's that type of thing. But,
I mean, the way I look at it, if Bigfoot wanted a piece of somebody, you have already got a piece of somebody. I don't think they want to harm us.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'd be out there going, oh, come here, little guy.
Yeah. So, on some of your, events that you guys went on and stuff. Okay, I know you kind of focus in one particular area, but is there any other place in Ohio that you're looking at? You know, I mean, a lot of people, you know, look at Salt Fork, you know, right. Because you know the Monster Quest show, and there's a, you know, it is one of the heavy you know, places, you know, where a lot of sightings and stuff are taking place, but do you see anything, I mean, that you guys feel, you know, there's more activity outside of that particular area?
Yeah, there's a few places, especially you get over more toward the eastern part of Ohio. I think the whole eastern part of Ohio seems to be thick with reportings. And, I mean, you just get out there, you never know what you're going to find anywhere, actually.
Yeah, have you, you guys ever looked into, like, the Adams County or Scioto area?
No, we haven't been down around Adams County yet.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
We're a delay there. No, Adams County. There's a lot of good stuff that's been going on in Adams County, and you know, Scioto County seems to be, you know, because you got the Wayne National Forest and you have Shawnee National Forest up in that area. And, you know, I know in the late 90s, there was a rash of reports that was coming out of the Wayne National Forest area, right where it's right there where the Scioto and Adams County area is. You know, one in particular that really sets in my mind was four nuns that were walking on one of the trails up there, and just this thing just came across and went right across the trail, you know, in front of these nuns. I mean, didn't even pay any attention to the nuns and just walked by. And, you know, and their whole thing is, you know, they didn't even, you know, when they saw it, you know, they didn't fear or was scared or anything like that. They said it was like a real peaceful, you know, feeling that, you know, they knew this thing was, it, you know, wasn't going to hurt them, because it didn't even look at them. It just went right, you know, went right through the path wherever it was going. And we had a lot of, you know, stuff going on, you know, back in, you know, in that area. But, you know, that's why I was wondering if you guys ever been down, you know, to, you know, those particular areas.
We haven't been down in the Wayne, you know, and we've talked about going there. That's one of the places on our list that we want to check out.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I know you're going up to the conference. I'm kind of excited about that, to see you guys up at the conference this year.
Yeah.
So this is this going to be your first one?
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be a party. It's fun. Friday night's the best. That's when everybody gets together.
I can't hardly hear you.
I said Friday night's the best. That's when everything fun goes on, and then you have about 500 investigators out in the field that night running into each other, you know, and you'll get all different reports of, oh, I heard something out there. You know, yeah, well, there's a whole bunch of other people out in the field, and you're going to find that out, because you're not going to be able to find one spot out there to go do any type of research and things out there.
That's the only night we're staying. It's Friday. We were leaving Saturday night after the conference is over with.
Oh, okay. Now, what's your particular role with the group that, or your job that, you know, you're assigned basically to when, you know,
well,
with
my title is research manager. Basically, what that means is when we do an expedition, I record everything from the weather to, you know, just the times that, you know, things happen, and just everything that goes on, you know, basically the whole time we're on the expedition. And I'm also, I go out and hike through the woods and stuff and look for potential food sources for what a Bigfoot might eat. I always like walking in the woods and collecting herbs and stuff like that, so I'm pretty good at identifying plants and knowing what's edible and what's not. And so, you know, that's kind of fun to do, too.
Now, when you want...
Jay says I'm obsessed.
Hey, I've been out in the field plenty of times and find people out there hunting mushrooms. Salt Fork's a big place. You run into them out there a lot. If there's a particular area you're going to look at, so you are the one that's basically going to scout the area or do a recon on the area, either go to out to the field or look it up or something like that and get things ready. But is that basically what you're saying? You're the one that handles that?
We all do that. I record everything, you know, like I see what the barometer is and what the weather is, and, you know, I write it all down, the moon phase, and, you know, like if something happens, we get a tree knock, I'm the one that's responsible for writing down the time and everything that happened so we can have it for our report. I take note of how the camp's set up, where what is, because, you know, I think that may be important, you know. You know, you change one certain thing, you're not going to have the same result as what you had last time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So when you're out on your investigation, what type of equipment do you guys take out to the field? You know, I don't want you to give up any of your secrets or anything, but I'm just kind of curious about how, you know, different researchers do it. You know, when you have your AO set up or your area of operation, you know, set up, I mean, do you do it the same each time you go out to the field, or do you kind of do it different, or it just depends on the terrain? But give us an idea of some of the stuff that you use.
Well, it's pretty much basic of what any other Bigfoot hunter has. We have the parabolic mics, have a night vision, binoculars. We have an official tree-knocking bat.
Yes, I saw that. I was really impressed with that.
We have different sound recording devices that we hook up to the parabolic mic.
Do you set cameras up in the field or anything? I mean, not the trail cams, but I mean, do you get out there with like a DVR, you know, with you know, live cameras set up out there in the field, you know, or anything like that?
Yeah, we have like the Sony night shots. I have the IR. Right. On it, where you can see in the dark on them and get around out there and sort of just walk around, see what we can capture on it. And then we have the stands, like you mentioned, too, that we set out.
Well, then, no, that's good, because, you know, I was just wondering, you know, how, you know, a lot of people sit there and do it. Because, you know, when I got to the field, I liked it, you know, I like to set up, you know, when you have your AO out there, you know, get your cameras out there and a little bit further out, you know, put your trail cams out, you know, and things. And, you know, I one thing I think is a really good idea is if you, you know, if you have, you know, someone out there set up in, you know, maybe one or two listening posts is what I call them, basically, to just, you know, basically to just sit there and listen to see if there's anything out in the field there, you know, with you know, you know, the mics and everything, to try to pick up any type of sounds if anything's moving into that location, you know, find out, you know, I mean, just to make sure that, you know, you're not running into different people, because, you know, you know, well, as I do, you know, I've been out to the field so many times, you know, that it at night, and, you know, you hear movement out there, and it's just, you know, it's a group of other guys out there doing the same thing that you're doing, you know. And they're hearing you, and everybody's moving at a slow pace, you know, and things. So, how many people you got in your group there?
Right now we have 4 and 1 part-time person, which is my husband. The way he works, can't do it full-time, so.
Oh, my God. Trying to find a mate, I know, to do the stuff that you're doing, man. It's hard to try to get your family member. I've been trying to get my daughters, all the boyfriends, think that, and my girlfriend's dad's a, Bigfoot hunter. That's cool. And my daughter's like, they're like rolling their eyes. Like, oh my God,
My son loves it. He's 13. He got to go with once, and he just loved every minute of it. But I don't think I'm going to let him go with us anymore because, when things started to get kind of hairy, the first thing I think of is my baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Grab my camera, record this. I'm thinking, where's my baby?
but you know what? I was doing this before a lot of researchers were doing it, where we were doing call blasting, where we were using children laughing, children, crying, children conversation. We were getting a lot of activity, just from that. And not having a child out there, I don't think would put that child in jeopardy or anything like that, because I really think that they're very family oriented, and that I don't think they would actually hurt, any child or anything, out there. Have you ever thought about that? Like, when you're, you got your son out there to, maybe just put him out just a little bit by himself, just to sit there and talk to himself, or maybe sing a child song or something like that. And, maybe have a camera on him or something like that, and just see if any type of activity, because I really honestly don't believe, that, he would actually hurt, a child.
I wouldn't want to think so, but I'd hate to have to whoop up on a Bigfoot over my baby. That'd be the last thing I'd want to have on my mind when I'm out there, though.
I know, but Yeah, but have you ever thought about that, doing something like that?
I've thought of recording, instead of doing like call blast or like a whoop or a yell, I've thought about trying that, having, recording some kids playing and around and stuff and playing that. But yeah, I think they are attracted to children. You hear a lot of reports of that.
Yeah, definitely. Also, I want to mention, if anybody out there wants to call in, my producer will go ahead and put the number up. Feel free to call. What's that? Huh?
Henry's going to call. He's asking for the number.
Yeah, Henry, get up there. Ask some questions. Yeah, feel free. I mean, you don't mind doing that, do you?
No, I don't care.
All right, that's good. But
Henry will be nice, I know.
Oh, Henry. You never met Henry, have you?
I've talked to him in chat on.
You're gonna meet him. That poor guy. I'm gonna tell you something about Henry. God bless his soul. He came to the conference last year, and the poor guy was just so tired getting ready for the conference. Fell asleep on the bus. Ended up somewhere, I don't know, California maybe. I guess I don't know where he was, somewhere, and it took him forever to get to the conference and stuff. And poor guy, we told him don't fall asleep. Oh, Chicago. Thanks, Sarah, Henry. Don't fall asleep, because I'm flying this time. So he'll get stuck on the airplane. It'll sit on the runway for about 6 hours, because that poor guy's got all the worst luck trying to get to these conferences and stuff. So
our first caller is on the line.
All right, first caller, who are you? What's your name? And
it's Henry.
Hey,
speak of the devil.
You bring a lot of money to the conference to buy everything up this year?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Henry gets to buy all the good stuff up before anybody else does. So I'm going to bring a bunch of stuff to make some money off Henry. So, all right, Henry, go ahead with your question, brother.
Well, my question for Adrienne is, what sort of attractants do y'all use in the field?
Such as, what do you mean? We mainly just use the Trinox. We experiment with different kinds of things. We've been tossing some new ideas around, things to try. We just haven't had a chance to get out there yet this year and try some new stuff. So.
Also, as far as as far as call blasting, do y'all do call blasting, and do you use your own voices, or do you use recordings?
We use recordings of, like, supposed whoops and screams and stuff that we find here and there on the internet. We tried call blasting those, but, you know, we've never had any results with those, so time to find something else.
You know, I'm sorry, go ahead, Henry.
Have you ever used the famous Ohio howl? You know, that's the one that goes, ooh, you hear the dog barking?
You know, I think that was what we had, yeah, because I remember hearing the dog bark. I wasn't sure I'm not for sure.
You can go on a BFRO and get some of my whoops from Salt Fork. And play some of them.
The Kentucky Bigfoot may not like the Ohio.
Now Henry, you made me forget what I was going to sit there and say. Oh, one thing I was going to say about the call blasting, you know, I mean, it is, I think it's somewhat effective, but I think it's more really ineffective because, you know, when you play something on audio, you know, putting it out there, I mean, if the thing can actually understand, you know, what it's saying, because everybody, you know, when let's say in Ohio, you're call blasting sounds that came out of California, you know, or Oregon or Alaska or something like that. I mean, you know, there's vocals and speech might be something totally different than that here, you know, and for that to actually understand, I think is just kind of pointless, you know, because I really believe these things can mimic animals, you know, and that's how they communicate. And I think if their hearing and senses are so much better than ours, that, you know, something coming out from an audio is going to, you know, I think they're going to be able to pick that up, that something's not right about that. It's not going to be correct to them, and they're going to sense that something's not right.
Right.
And I think, you know, I think that.
And stuff like that, you know, they pick up on that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's the radio pitch itself. You know, they're going to be able to pick up on that, and they're going to know that it's, you know, the California ones yelling, you know, oh, it's a great morning, oh, you know, stretching and stuff. And, you know, and they know it's, you know, the radio, there's something, you know, a pitch or something coming with the, you know, the vocals, you know, and like I said, you know, they may not speak the same Bigfoot language in Ohio, you know, than they do in California and stuff. So, I mean, a lot of that stuff I think is really, you know, somewhat pointless, you know, because, you know, I never, when I did Bigfoot calls out there, I never got responses. Now, when I did like children, you know, laughing, singing, crying and stuff, I got more response from that than I did by any other type of, you know, call blasting using a recorded Bigfoot sound.
That's what happened with that expedition last week, you know, the joint expedition in Spotsylvania County, Virginia. You know, they used children noises, you know, baby cries, children laughing, things of that nature. And they said they got more response from that than they got from anything else.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, because I think that I really think that they're family-oriented, you know, and, you know, they can pick, you know, a crying up, you know, from, you know, their offsprings compared to ours. And, you know, and a lot, you know, I've talked to hunters and I even heard it myself. A baby bobcat, I mean, sounds like a human baby crying. I mean, it's really remarkable if you ever heard, you know, a baby bobcat.
It sounds like a woman screaming, ones I've heard in Kentucky.
Yeah, but I mean, but there is some that actually sound like, you know, an infant crying, you know. So, but go ahead. You have anything else you want to ask?
No, that's pretty much it. But I promise I will not fall asleep on the plane.
Definitely don't. Because this I think this is going to probably be one of the best of all of Don's conferences. You know, hopefully, Gimlin is going to be well enough to, you know, that he will make it. And Larry Lon, he's always a trip anyhow.
Yeah.
Stuff. So.
All right. Well, thank you very much for answering my question and answering my questions. I look forward to meeting you, Adrian, in 2 weeks. And Jody, look forward to seeing you again.
All right. You too, brother. Be good.
All right. Y'all have a good one.
You too.
Uh-huh. Bye.
So, so you've been using call blasting when you guys go out there. Is that something that you've been doing a lot, or is that just, you know, every once in a while you've been trying to do that?
Yeah, we've just toyed with it a little bit. Like I said, we've never got any response to it. To me, it's, you know, when we cranked it up really loud, it sounded a lot, you heard a lot of the distortion. And, you know, I'm like you. I think, you know, they're able to tell, you know, the difference, you know, in it, something that's live out there making a sound and something with a lot of distortion in it.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, like I said, you know, some of these audios, you know, that some of these people have, I mean, there's, you know, 3, 4, 5 generation, you know, copies that they got. And it's just, you know, they can sense. I mean, I'm sure they're not that stupid. You know, they can figure out that, you know, hey, this isn't, you know, this, you know, something's here is not right. Now, when you're out, okay, when you're talking about tree knocking, okay, now, do you, when you do the tree knocking, do you do it to the point where you only do it when you get a response, or you try to do it first to get a response?
We try to do it first to get a response. We usually, maybe about every half hour to an hour or something, just get up. One of the guys usually will, and maybe hit once or twice, and then, you know, we'll wait, sit and listen, see if we hear any responses for a while. You know, we don't sit there and constantly do it. You know, it's just a,
right. Now, when you do it, okay, do you normally do like a 3-knock, or do you do a 2-knock?
Normally, I think they do just one. I've never done the knocking. I always leave that up to the guys. They're better at smacking the trees.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because I've talked with different researchers about this, and, you know, there's a theory now that's coming out that what, you know, they're thinking that tree knocking might be is not actually, not actually someone or something taking a stick and beating the tree with it. They think it's more of a chest knock, you know, where they're hitting their chest like a gorilla does, where they're, you know, getting the echo and everything. Some of the researchers now starting to believe that's what it is. Do you think they're out there communicating as far as saying, you know, hey, there's intruders into the woods and stuff?
Yeah, they could be hunting. I think that may be a way they communicate when they're hunting, especially like when they're hunting deer. It could be, you know, it may be, like, I've heard of a theory that it's always one short of how many ever people's in your group. Like, if there's 4 people in your group, they knock 3 times or something like that. You know, I've heard that. I don't know how true that is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, because, you know, when, like, if I hear a tree knock, you know, like a 2, I may response back like with a 3, you know, and if they response back 3, I may response back with a 2 or maybe a 1. You know, I don't try to do 3, you know, they do 3, I do 3 back and forth and stuff, because, you know, you try to see if it's intelligent, or if it, you know, you're out there, you know, doing tree knocks with another group, because, like, you know, we did an investigation with the American Bigfoot Society up at Salt Fork, you know, and we were doing the tree knocks, and we were doing the hooping and stuff, and we were getting tree knocks and hooping back. Well, you know, we found out the BFRO had a group of guys, you know, a little bit further out from where we were. And we were basically, what we were doing was, you know, communicating with each other, you know, and things. And, So my question to you, when you go out to the field, do you try to find out if there's anyone else out there prior to, like, any other groups or anything like that? I mean, when you get out there, do you get out there early enough to look at the area to go do like a recon of the area just to search, you know, for evidence and to see if there's anyone else out there? Or do you, you know, let people know that you're going to be out there so you don't run into other people? Because, you know, the reason why I'm asking, because, you know, God, I've ran into this so many times. I mean, so many times where I thought that, you know, I'm getting something really good, you know, some good hoopings, tree knocks, and, you know, evidence, and it's just, you know, it's somebody else, you know, that you ran into.
Yeah, we get out. We don't really let people know that we're in there because, you know, that you may get a lot of people hoaxing you that way.
Oh, but, no. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But we did go out and we hike around the area. So far, we've never really had everywhere we've been has been like in remote locations. And we've never had a problem with other Bigfoot hunters being in the area. But we do look to see how often like a certain path is used by hikers or horses or, you know, what have you that's around there.
No, it's what I was meaning. Let me rephrase that. To the point that, let's say, you know, both our groups knew each other, and we do research in the same area sometimes. Like, I would contact you saying, listen, I'm going out to the field this weekend out in this area. Are you guys planning to be there? So I know, you know, that you're there to expect if I do get some response or something, then, you know, find out if it is you guys are actually big with that. That's what I meant. But, you know,
definitely, you know, we would make sure we knew where each other was at.
Mm-hmm. What's up? So, do you guys got, like I said, you know, we're not trying to find out where you're going or anything, but you guys got anything interesting coming up? Or any good leads or anything?
It seems like we just keep getting back to Kentucky. I had a cousin of mine that she found out. She said she was snooping around on my Facebook page and seeing what I did. She didn't really realize what I do. And she said, you know, she thought it was great that I was into all this. And then she started telling me about her neighbor. And her next-door neighbor, she said he owns around 250 acres and that he found some prints and he took pictures of them. And he said they was too big to be a bear's print is all he knew. And I'm in the process of getting them to send me the pics of the, you know, the pictures he took, you know, to see what we think it is. And and talk with him, and we may be heading down that way here pretty soon to check it out while it's still fresh.
Oh my God, Kentucky is a very, very active place when it comes to Bigfoot. You know, like you said, when I, you know, did some stuff with the American Bigfoot Society, went down in Kentucky, found a lot of really good, interesting stuff. We were on one investigation out there in Kentucky, and there was one particular, I mean, you know, they had bulls, they had cows, and they had horses. And it was, what was so weird was they would only go to like so far up to where this lake was, and they wouldn't go any further because it rained like 2 days before and it was mud. And there was like, you know, when we went out there to this area, I mean, they didn't go nowhere near it. They wouldn't even go up towards it. We found no tracks of horses, cows or bulls or anything, dogs or anything, you know, from this one certain point where they're having all this activity. And I mean, nothing. We had three bait sites set up there and nothing got touched. I mean, normally you would, because we set, you know, two of them on opposite sides of the lake. So we knew that, you know, we would have to get either a raccoon or, you know, some type of little critter or something like that's going to go down to the lake to drink, you know, and they're going to touch the bait, but we didn't even get nothing. No little critters or anything touched the bait, you know, and what was so weird about, because, you know, when you got up to this area, I mean, you walked in and you felt it. You felt that there, you know, instantly something's watching you, you know, it's just something odd about this. Cause like I say, when you got a, you know, 500-pound bull that won't go near this area, you know, it kind of tells you that, you know, there's definitely something there, you know. And then, like I said, that was probably, I would have to say, the most intense and frightening event I've ever been on, you know, because I don't, you know, like I said, you know, I've been in the Army for 15 years. I'm a combat veteran. And I mean, it takes a lot to scare me. And I've been out in the jungle. I've been out in the field by myself, you know, but you know, this was one place that, you know, I was really, I did not want to be. I mean, I very seldom ever feel like that when I get out to the field. But real quick, we're going to take our last break here. I appreciate everybody hanging in there. Like I said, I've been fighting the flu for the last 2 days. I am so medicated up, trying to get my schoolwork done and everything. And I just appreciate everybody hanging in there with my my questioning and stuff. So hang in there. Andrea will be right back, and we'll be back here shortly on Ohio Crypto Radio.
Haunted Times Magazine, honored to have been chosen by the IPAA as the number one paranormal magazine in the world, offering its readers a look into the supernatural. Publishing consistently since 2005, Haunted Times Magazine has brought its readers the best information on hauntings, ghosts, UFOs, cryptozoology, the newest technology, and much, much more. Start your subscription today by visiting the Haunted Times Magazine website at www.hauntedtimes.com. Just click on the subscribe now banner, fill out the simple information needed, and you'll begin your subscription to Haunted Times with our most recent issue, featuring an in-depth interview with Zach, Nick, and Aaron of television's Ghost Adventures. Mention this advertisement in the comment section of your order form and receive a much sought-after rare back issue of Haunted Times Magazine free with your paid subscription. Visit www.hauntedtimes.com today.
Hey everybody, it's Crystal from North Kentucky Paranormal Society and Paranormal Outreach Radio. Have you ever wanted to investigate Bobby Mackey's but never had a chance? We have the chance for you now. For only $55 a person, you can join NKYPS and Craps on an investigation from 8 p.m. till 2 a.m. on June 22, 2010. Space is limited to 20 people, so please, if you want your tickets, you better get them while they're here. For further information, you can contact me at christel@nkyps.com. I look forward to hearing from you.
Join Residual Hauntings live every Wednesday night at 11 Eastern on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Residual Hauntings Live will bring you the best of the best, and not to mention, the Paranormal Ninja. So wind your Wednesday down with Residual Hauntings Live at 11 Eastern on the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network.
ASPRN.com, the All Souls Paranormal Radio Network. Hosts Mike and Jeff, authors of Haunted Cincinnati and Southwest Ohio, plan to delve into the subject of ghosts, UFOs, and cryptoids, talking to investigators, authors, and so much more. Tune in every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. for Miami Town Ghost Talk.
Hey, I know those guys from Miami Town. There's a good group of guys there. And so they have a festival, Parafest, that they do in October. If anybody ever gets a chance to get to Cincinnati, Adrian will tell you it's a blast. It's fun. You know, when the time comes, I'll give you guys a little bit more input about that. But Adrian,
yeah.
Now have you when you're out in the field, when you've done some of your investigations and stuff like that, have you ever got to the point where you, how can I say this? You knew that there was something. I mean, it was, the situation got intense.
Yeah, definitely. It got pretty intense the last time we were down there. You know, when I was told you about having the rock thrown into the camp and
yeah,
to the tree knot. Yeah, it got pretty intense. I mean, had this feeling. Because, you know, there was something in the all around, just thrashing in the woods, and, you know, you just had the feeling that you just needed to leave.
Oh, you know, when we were down there back in the 90s, I mean, we were in an area, we didn't camp out there, but we went out there, because it's not that far from us, we went out there, and we were just going to stay out in the field late and then head back, but there was a part there that's got where the creek is, and we got ran out of there. I mean, literally ran out. We had rocks thrown at us. I mean, trees were shaking. They were, like how a bear will sit there and scratch his back up against a tree and the tree waves. We were getting that out in the field, literally. Wow. And this was getting at dusk. And, I mean, we were getting grunts, growls, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And we were running along the creek bed, along the tree line rather. And whatever it was in the creek bed. And there was more than one of them because you heard them stomp in the water there. And I mean, it was scary down here at that particular place that you're talking about. Cause like I said, I want to go back there. Next time you guys go, please invite me. I want to go down.
Definitely.
But yeah, there's definitely something in that particular area. I believe if anywhere in Kentucky, that's where it's at. Cause it gets intense. So tell us about that. Tell, you know, what exactly the situation was, if you can, you know, and what happened.
Well, believe it or not, I was asleep when most of it went down. Jay and LB came and woke me up. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And
well, next week we're going to have Jay on the show to talk about it. No, go ahead.
Yeah, I woke up to banging on, I was just leaving the van, and they're banging on my windows. Adrian, get out of here right now. I got out there, and they were pretty well looking everywhere, you know, because that was something that just, you know, was scaring them to death. And
were you guys getting...
You could hear stuff around the camp, you know, something was definitely around. And like I said, the feeling, you could just feel it. You know, when I come out of the van, you know, I just felt, you know, it was like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like thick in the air or something, you know, it seems real heavy, you know, the atmosphere just seems heavier or something.
Did you get any, like smells, or did you get any grunts or growls or,
we didn't get anything like that. There was some clicking noises picked up on audio, but that could have been a raccoon. It could have been, you know, anything that I picked up. But.
You know, because it's interesting you mentioned that. Don Keating, we were talking last week, and he actually spoke at a Cincinnati conference a few weeks ago that I was at. And he was looking into this where, you know, some of the top researchers who are scientists, you know, and stuff were thinking that those clicking sounds are sounds that you know, Bigfoot is doing to communicate, because gorillas do that. They make that, you know.
Popping or whatever they want
to. Yeah, popping sound and stuff to show, for threats and things like that. And they're thinking that's what that might be, which, you know, makes a lot of sense. A lot of sense and stuff. But nothing.
Rocks, clicking rocks together as a way of communicating too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these things can't be stupid. They have to be intelligent. I mean, they probably know that they have to use rocks, you know, to use as tools for certain things, you know, maybe breaking the bones over, you know, open to get the mural out and things like that. So what is your view on a Sasquatch? Do you think he's strictly a vegetarian? Or do you think that maybe he is a vegetarian and he only eats meat if there's not that much vegetarian food out there for him to eat, more or less?
He eats, you know, a lot of whatever he can find, basically. A lot of vegetation, you know, because it's abundant everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, deer, you know, he's probably basically like we are. I mean, we eat our vegetables and we like our meat, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I sit there and I think he's probably very similar to a grade ape. You know, he'll eat what vegetation's out there. And I believe, you know, he will eat meat to get the protein that he needs. So he's not getting from, the fish and things. But I don't think he's a strictly meat eater, to the point that, he's actually out there taking down deer and they're, eating it and things like that. But I believe that too. I don't think that, because I sit there and look at it that, can you imagine what the calorie intake that this thing's going to have a day?
A lot.
He's going to spend every, well, let me get, before I say this, I talked to Peter Burns about this, and Peter Burns, is an old timer Bigfoot researcher, and he really believes that, Bigfoot hides his tracks. I disagree with that. I think because this thing's going to spend every waking moment looking for food. He's not going to have time to sit there and worry about hiding his tracks. Or looking for people or anything. He's got to eat, and he's going to spend his waking hour. I mean, look at us. When we get hungry, we got a refrigerator full of food. We got a cupboard full of food. We can't even decide what we want because we bounce from back and forth until something catches our interest there. And all we need to do is just get up and go to the other room or go down to McDonald's. This guy's got to go travel miles just to, get something to fill him up.
Of course, you hear about the deer and the way they are found with the livers missing and their legs twisted and stuff. That just sounds like, it just has to be Bigfoot. What else would do that?
Because I talk about this in two of my books that, they're finding, deers with their livers missing and some of them have kidneys and stuff missing because of the protein. And I believe that, he will eat some of the meat, but I think that's, he goes after parts for the protein. Now, I was up at Salt Fork a few weeks ago and I found a deer, a young, it was probably a fawn. I would say a little bit before a doe. But this thing, I found where it was actually laying at and where it was pulled out by it. You can see where it was pulled out by its legs because the arms were up, like something was pulling it from the area. And both of the back legs were ripped off. I mean, literally twisted off. The stomach was gone. The entrails were laying out there. The liver was gone. I couldn't find the kidneys. I couldn't find the lungs. The neck was broke, but there was no bite marks on the legs, no bite marks on the neck. So I know it couldn't have been the coyote because, first of all, both of the legs still would not have been laying next to the, the body of the deer. The entrails would not have been laying there.
Then the person they would have ate would have been.
Yeah. Well, it would have been the entrails, and they would have ran off with the legs, right. And then came back to, to finish the rest of the deer off. But I mean, coyotes. So they'll go for the legs to get the deer down, and then they go for the throat, the choke it. But there was none of that on there, but the neck was broke because the neck was completely twisted, and I thought that was the oddest thing. And rigor mortis was already starting to set in on the deer. And that's what I thought was just so weird. I took a lot of pictures of it. What I thought was just so weird was that, the entrails were still there. This thing was probably, I'd say maybe 3 days old and everything was still there, but right. No coyotes or anything went around here. And I just thought, that was weird that, something did this.
Report you hear, when someone reports finding deer like that, nothing is ever touched. Other scavengers, you think at least the buzzards would be after it or something, but nothing else will touch it.
No.
I find that kind of odd.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that going on where nothing, is touching it. But, we'll find out sooner enough what's going on with that. But, Adrian, listen, I would appreciate that you came on tonight. Thank you for bearing with me. Like I said, this flu's been kicking my butt the last 2 days, trying to get my schoolwork and stuff done, and I'm medicated up, and I was, if I asked a question, it didn't make no sense. It's the drugs talking, so not me, okay? But listen, I appreciate it. I'd love to have you back on. If you guys go on an investigation, love to have Jay on with you.
We need to get his butt on here.
Yeah, definitely get him on. You know, if you go back down to that particular site, something happens, let me know. I want to get you guys on the show. I want to hear about what's going on, because I know everybody's going to be extremely excited to hear, you know, about that. And like, oh, definitely. And everybody out there, I appreciate you guys being here. I appreciate you hanging in there and you know, dealing with this sick person tonight. You know, like I said, I know I sounded out of it. I'm medicated, and I apologize. But next week, yeah. Well, next week we're going to have Billy Willard on.
And, oh, okay.
Yeah,
Billy, I listened to the show on Monday.
Yeah, they had their expedition. It was a week-long expedition, so I'm having Billy on. Billy's going to give us insight on everything that happened that week, and I'm going to tell you there's some pretty incredible and exciting things that happened down there. So I hope everybody's out there. Please put the word out. You know, get some more people listening. I'll post stuff up on Facebook, and but I appreciate everybody listening, and just want to let you know my new book is out. It's called Traces of the Grassman: The Search for the Ohio Bigfoot. You can contact me at OC4BFS@hotmail.com to you know, if you want to get a copy of the book, or you can contact Publish America. So you guys take care. Adrian, you have a good one. Please keep in touch, and let's get out on the field together. I love it. All right. You guys have a good one.
You too.
I'm sorry. All right. You too. Take care. Everybody.
Bye-bye.
All right. Everybody, you have a good night, and I appreciate you for being here.
Thank you for listening to Ohio Crypto Radio.